Welcome to In the Deep. I'm your host, Catherine Ingram. The following Zoom session was recorded in Virginia, USA, on March 16th, 2024. It's called Death and Dying. I invite you to sign up on our mailing list if you'd like to be informed of upcoming live Zoom sessions or see the schedule of other upcoming events. You can find the mailing list link on the homepage of CatherineIngram.com. Well, I wanted to fill you in a bit. I have had a very strange year. It's been just a whirlwind of motion and of not having a home and moving from country to country and back. I was considering a move back to the U.S. So I came and I was here 5 months over the summer and left in November. And went back to Australia, planning to really get settled. And I arrived and I bought a car because I had closed down my life prior to leaving and going to America. I had closed out everything in Australia. So I went back and got a car and made a plan to move to Victoria and arranged to have this house rental on the other side of a duplex of one of my very close friends who lives in Melbourne. And I was going to be setting up sessions in Melbourne. Anyway, I got word that my brother had been diagnosed with what's called decompensated liver cirrhosis, which is, it's a terminal illness. And I just beat it back here. I canceled everything and came back to America to be near my brother for as long as I can help him. And it has thrown me into this deep consideration of something that I'm used to in life, and I think you will all understand, the dynamic tension between surrender to what is and making effort in directions that might be of help. This incredible tension, this dynamic tension between just saying, okay, it is as it is, but is there a possibility of tweaking it a bit and making it better or kinder or easier or more true? It's that dynamic that I'm living at the moment. And it can get to a very quiet, still point, especially as I see my beloved brother, who does not look like my brother anymore. And the suddenness of something like that, and the daily letting go that comes with that, it just brings it all to a much deeper and more profound level when you're sitting in the face of that and you're basically having to say also to this. And yet, of course, I am saying also, is there anything I can do to make this a little easier, a little bit less painful, a little bit less scary? So that's essentially what my koan has been for the last month since we found out. A little bit over a month. I am just in this strange surrender to the unknown and kind of flopping at my relatives' guest rooms and just saying, okay, this is what it is. It's also such a privilege to be reminded in such a strong way of the situation here, of the actual reality that we all live with. You know, I don't know if many of you know who Christopher Hitchens was. He died years ago. Great intellectual from the UK, but he moved to Washington, D.C. and lived in America for many years. And he wrote for lots and lots of journals, but he was a regular correspondent for Vanity Fair. And in the last phase of his life, the last months of his life, he wrote about the process he was in as he was going through terminal cancer. And in one part, he talked about how, as a cancer patient and as someone who's facing a terminal illness, it's as though you live in a different country from your usual countrymen. Like, they're all about something else. They're all on another game. But you're in this new country. You're in a different country. Your conversations are different than they ever were in your old country. And there is a privilege to recognizing that and to saying, okay, well, this is the new conversation, and this is the conversation we all face at some point. And along the way, we face it with our loved ones who go before us. So I don't want this to be a kind of gloom and doom, but I want to just acknowledge, put on the table, have death as our pal in this conversation, as our ally, and to also remember to appreciate, while you live still in this country of usual conversation and the sort of the daily rough and tumble of life and the little beauties and all the grace and all the things we love and the tiny pleasures, just to be grateful and remember those and remember this time as these are the good times. These are the good days. Sometimes when I leave my brother's house and I go back to where I'm staying, I walk in and life is just going on. People are talking about making dinner, and we have these new little babies in the family who are incredibly adorable and are just full of life and full of discovery, and everything they do is sweet and funny and beautiful. The contrast of that is very profound to me. Hello, dear.
Hi.
It's been so long.
It's been so long, and I just wanted to say, live with the learnings from you for so many years, from so many years ago. Yeah. And just I'm delighted to see you. And would have tried to get into your other Zooms, but I have no technical ability to try to work out the time zones and everything else.
So this one was easier.
Time being, and wish you peace.
Thank you. That is the greatest blessing, actually. I've been reflecting a lot on that. You've perhaps heard me speak more than a few times about how I used to hear from my Buddhist teachers, peace was the highest happiness. And I used to think, maybe. I can think of others when I was young. But I have seen the truth of that. That truth gets deeper. And, you know, I used to have a tagline on my flyers that said, choose peace. Sometimes I put choose freedom. Sometimes I put choose love. But choose peace. And that can come down to the tiniest decisions in the day and the tiniest decisions about a life, actually, even big decisions, I should say, that it can be a frame of reference when you're making a decision. Is this a more peaceful path? I often marvel how people don't seem to consider that, right? They get lured by the shiny objects and the excitement and the frisson of something. But in fact, if that's leading into stress and hungry ghost realms, it's a misery. And you start to suspect it is a misery for a lot of people who are living in the hungry ghost realms and are acquiring everything their hearts desire in terms of objects or experiences, but missing peace.
As you were talking about your brother, I reflected on those in my life who have gone before, and it kind of put me in this just really poignant space when you were talking. And I was looking outside and thinking, when you're in the presence of death, everything is just richer. It's deeper. Mm-hmm. It's more immediate. Mm-hmm. And then my next thought was, how might I live in that place all of the time? Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, sometimes minute to minute challenge to just stop with the, I need this, I need that, this isn't yeah. right, that's not right, everything's screwed, everything's okay. You know, just the constant mind chatter. When in that same second, I could choose the richness, the deepness, and yet I don't sometimes.
And sometimes you do, perhaps.
Sometimes I do.
So it's great that you have that inclination that you would like to have that be more of the time. Let's not say all of the time, because that's a demand that's it's a bridge too far, really. Mm. It doesn't have to be all of the time. It can be a lot of the time, and that is enough to transform a life. And when that becomes a habit, when your sort of default position is habitually, even when you're in your crazy space, you're leaning, you're going, oh boy, you know, get me back to peace. Tune to the peace channel. So that's a mind habit. And that can be, I don't want to say the word developed, but it becomes so much more encouraged the more you make that experiment.
Yeah.
You see that so many times when you're in a really crazy moment. And we all have them, I think. And in those times when it's really bad, and you toggle out of it, you wake up into the wondrous world for a minute or, you know, and you interrupt the nightmare. And when you've had that experience so many times, you start to have a confidence. You start to have a confidence that you're not going to go off the cliff in your mm-hmm. crazy mind. You're going to wake up in time. Just like with a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's very encouraging.
Yeah. Yes. Good, dear. Nice to
see you.
I'm going to call on someone, my dear friend, my brother in Melbourne.
Well, thanks for the invitation. Lovely to hear your voice as well. And greetings to everyone from just outside Melbourne in Australia. Where it is Sunday morning. I'm not sure what should I say. I keep thinking about Lincoln's. I think it was President Lincoln who said, better keep your mouth shut and be thought of to be a fool than open it and be proven to be one, or something like that.
But you've just disproven that theory.
No, that was Lincoln's wisdom, wasn't one.
No, but that you quoted it disproved the theory.
Right. Yeah, anyway, lovely to see you, really. It's
too.
Precious time, and I'm always astounded how easy it is to take for granted the fact that we sit in all these different corners of the world and can see each other and talk to each other. It's just that in itself should take us out of the automatic pilot and be in reverence to the privilege that our life has. I agree.
It is one of the better uses of technology.
Yes.
Yes, it is. I was reflecting on it today because during the pandemic, I don't know if you joined many of our, I think we didn't know each other yet.
No, yeah, that's
right. And we did regular sessions throughout pandemic. And for many of us, we were just fully locked down, but we had this community, this worldwide community, and we're hearing stories from all over the world of what people were experiencing. And it was, of course, there was a commonality of the experience. And I was just today, I mean, we really appreciated it during the time, but today I was remembering it with great gratitude that was very helpful for all of us to feel like we were connected in a really wonderful way, in a deep place.
Yeah, indeed. Hmm. Indeed. And to the benefits of all the US residents, the fact that you're there and you can, you can teach from there. But lucky we can have a little bit of you here through that technology.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, lovely.
We are in the little cabin with our garden, and it's 10:30
yes.
a.m.
Almost
in Holland.
Oh.
But this is the time that we could connect with you, which I was looking forward so much, as you know.
Oh.
So, yeah, hello, everybody, and hello, Catherine. And yeah, I was thinking about your talk about being with your brother and being close to death and the awareness of death. And the word close came to me because a memory came up of a friend of mine who was dying, and I wasn't getting closer to her in the process of death. Actually, she was withdrawing.
Yes.
Which was very painful for me. It sounds a bit egocentric to say that, of course, but that was the truth. It was a very important lesson for me that till the last second of death, everyone has her or his own way to live this life and to connect with others and to choose which way you do it. And I can respect that very strongly, although it's not always easy. So it sometimes seems, even if we take care of somebody else very much, that they are not willing to let us in the last bits of life.
Yes, yes. I'm experiencing that with my brother, who is... he's very angry about his circumstance. He's really angry and makes it quite hard for the caretaking around him. And I keep feeling into it, and I can feel how scared he is. Like, this anger is covering up this profound fear. And it's also a cautionary tale about not having a practice of letting go as you go along. I keep thinking how lucky it is to have the Dharma in one's life. And that, you know, even though we celebrate life, but we also have an understanding of where this is going, you know, and that doesn't really leave your consciousness. You're aware. And so that's another part of what I'm watching as well. And it's pretty heartbreaking because I see that the rage he's experiencing is just an added suffering on top of the already suffering situation. And yet I think that's how it is for a lot of people, according to, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and many others who've looked at the stages. And the stages don't have to necessarily go in order. I think some people might hop around a bit. Even once they come to acceptance, they might fall back into denial or to bargaining or depression. I find myself, you know, watching my brother and looking for some way to relieve him of this white-hot rage. You know, I said to him today, because he was just raging at, I went over there with one of my friends, one of his friends who I've become friends with. So it was that person and me and his wife were organizing his complicated medications and measuring out the liquids and the pills in this organizer thing. And he was just raging at us the whole time. He was just... And at one point I said, this is really toxic for you to be in this mind state. This is not good for you. But I couldn't get through. And I also have to surrender in those moments that this is what he's needing to do, and there's no talking him out of it, you know. And I have to just not react and not think, well, then you do it yourself. I just have to keep doing what I'm doing calmly, and that's how it is around him, helping him every day. It's like that. So to your point, yes, you know, it's not just this sort of sweet, deep conversations and saying the wonderful things that needed to be said. And it's not always like that. You don't always get a chance.
Yeah, well, that's not always easy for you. That must be, yeah.
Well, it's also, yeah. It's also part of the letting go. It's also part of me having to confront, do I get to have a moment of deep and profound love with my brother and tell him I'm here for you. I've come all the way from Australia for you and I love you. I hope I get to have that. I do just love him, but it's kind of like, you know, we'll sort of say it as one is walking out the door, not in the way that you're wanting to just say it directly. And he just isn't, he doesn't want to go there. So I have to bow to the truth of this situation and look for opportunities, but I may not have one. It's also another part of loving someone, actually, because, you know, if we only helped and were there for the sweethearts of the world who have deep dharma, there wouldn't be many people we'd be helping.
Yes, that's so. And what I noticed in this in this age and more people being sick or more people dealing with maybe terminal illnesses, that sometimes I have unexpected short conversations with people who go right into the matter unexpectedly and are very sacred almost. Then I wonder afterwards, how can it be that we have suddenly such direct contact and a direct talk about death and life? I was visiting some neighbor, I don't know her very well, and she's having treatments, and we were talking, and I heard myself say at one point that I was getting my teeth more into life, more and more actually these days, because I enjoy life so much and it's so beautiful and I feel so blessed. And I said, I'm supposed to be able to let go more getting older, and I'm supposed actually for myself that I would be able to be more detached. But I told her I'm not at all more detached, and that's how I felt at that moment. You know, it's I can't sit for all the time, but that's really how I felt. That I really feel, no, I don't want it to end now.
Yeah, no, we love life. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, very much so. But it can coexist, as you've taught me before.
Exactly. It can coexist.
Yes. I listen to your talks quite a lot from many years ago, and I am just always so grateful that we met and that I can listen to these talks. And
me too. I have so many memories of being around your kitchen table and just, oh my goodness, loved it. Yeah,
I'm wearing a skirt you once gave me, this long gray, very fleece thing, which is so great here in the cabin in the countryside.
It's great.
Remember it, but I'm wearing it right now.
Oh, great. I'm happy to know that.
I don't know how to phrase this exactly, but one thing that I'm working with is you have mentioned over the years you're feeling deeply and I'm like the opposite of that. I don't go deeply into sadness or despair or, you know, everything is just fine. I'm happy. Thank you. Right. That's my defense and how I was raised. And I think my personality. And I'm really seeing from other people that I'm practicing with that there's such an advantage to really facing things and feeling them deeply and not just distracting yourself and not feeling deeply. So I don't know if you could talk. I think since we have such different personalities and approaches to this, it would be interesting for you to talk more about it. And I don't know if it's the advantages of it or, you know, to just kind of help me along that path of trying to not just get rid of everything so quickly without feeling it.
What do you mean get rid of everything?
If there's like a problem or worry, or it's like, I don't dwell on things. I don't think about things. I don't feel things. It's like,
But then do problems sort of accrue because you haven't been paying attention to some of them, or is it working okay that way?
That's a good question. Like, why not keep going this path? I feel like
I'm asking because, look, we each have our own nature, our own conditioning, our own personality, inclinations, and so on. It doesn't sound like a problem to me that you don't tend to be depressive or dwelling or sort of going, as you say, going deep with certain types of feelings. You're able to move on, unless you're just in avoidance, and that can also cause a bunch of problems to start to fester. If you're just avoiding things, some people are just dancing as fast as they can so they don't have to look at what's around them, and a mess can be around them. But I would also say to you, you know, you have been very attracted to these kinds of conversations. So something deep in you is hearing them, or else you wouldn't have any interest in these kind of conversations. So it may be that you got a lucky draw in the conditioning, that you got happy conditioning. My niece, who sometimes is the co-host on one of these sessions, you've probably met her during the pandemic years, her conditioning was very happy, and she's just bubbly and bright no matter what happens. And yet she keeps her life together and has two kids, and she's a university professor. She has a job, you know, she's high functioning. And I feel also very sensitive and psychologically astute, but she's irrepressibly happy. I marvel at it because I'm not that way. Maybe you're more like that. Maybe your nature is just light. And I don't say it in a pejorative way. I say it, maybe it's light in terms of not burdened.
Well, that's interesting. I kind of think about that because I do feel like I just am kind of on the surface of things and not really living deeply and not experience, but I don't know. I hear what you're saying. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think this came up because it's in a Buddhist meditation class that I'm in, and it was one of the topics recently. And we've been talking about facing things and feeling things. I thought, well, I don't do that. I haven't even talked about it. I admitted that. I just don't do that. And but anyway, it's maybe just something to think about, different ways to look at it. And
I mean, unless there's a big mess being created, then, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Thank you, Catherine.
When my mother was in her last months of living with a rare brain disease, her voice was being taken away. All her functions were being taken away. And so she could think, but she couldn't form a lot of words and less and less. And the words that she kept the longest were, I want, I need. And she would be able to say, I want. And then she couldn't find the word, or I need. And this right up until her last days, she could still say, I want and I need. And at the time, I wasn't really on the Dharma path, but I recognized, wow, this is pretty profound, that this is what she's reduced to as she's dying. And the
but
more
is it
I've
like
been
I
on
want
the
some water, or I want, like, is was it? Or
it was usually something more vague than that. It was like the material needs were all right there. That's what I would try to, you know, guess or bring her or provide. but it just was a refrain. And I could tell it was a big existential want and need.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been thinking, that was almost 20 years ago now. It's be 20 years ago this fall. Mm-hmm. And I just have never stopped thinking about that. And I catch myself when I'm thinking, I need, you know, I'm like, get clear on it. And I just think, is that, if we, you know, don't address that in our lives, we get back down to the last moments and that's what we're left with. I want, I need.
Late in the day for that project, but I would hope in my own case, and I've thought about it quite a bit in my many, many hours of silence and over the course of my life, like what in Buddhism we used to call the death conscious moment. And just the thought of how does one want to exit this world? Like, what state of mind do you want to be in? And what always comes to me is a feeling of gratitude. Like, I would like that to be the case. Who knows if one is going to be in a coma? You don't know how you're going to be and whether how much agency you'll have over your own thoughts and feelings. But what seems to me appropriate, if one has that option, is just to say, thank you. Wow. You know, what a ride it is, you know, what a crazy thing to live here and be here and all our days and our adventures and our loves and losses and schemes and plans and dreams and people we've met and friends and teachers, and each of our days is so rich. I think just even asking oneself now and again as a little reminder, how do you want to be at that moment? And could you not be more like that throughout?
I have been thinking about you so much, and I can tell that your life was in upheaval, and I'm sorry to hear the details of it. At the same time, your brother couldn't have a better partner in this part of his journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of you and your words on this topic all the time, as friends and husbands of friends around me have been dying, and someone will relay the information to me about the situation and say, it's just horrible. And I think that it's not horrible. This is part of the deal. This is what we signed up for. This is not someone picking on you. This is just what's going to happen. And I'm not able to find any of the words of comfort that I think people are used to or want. I'm never comfortable with them. My feeling is, if the natural order occurs as is expected, your husband, who is already older than you, will probably predecease you, and you will be there for him. And that is also something you signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not, it's not comforting, but it comforts me that I've been actively focusing on having some kind of a death practice. And just a couple of weeks ago, I got this really clear image. It was like I was inside looking at my skull and someone was shining a black light on it. And it was just like, this is it. Like,
yeah,
it ends. This is it. The little details that you were stressing about a second ago, they're not important.
No.
This is the end game.
No. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Yeah. When you were saying that you want to say to them, well, this is what you signed up for, your husband was older and so on, do you actually say that to them, or do you just, no, right, you just think?
No, I'm tend to be saying that to peripheral people who are saying to me, you know, this is so awful. It's the worst.
Yeah.
And it's not. What I didn't get to is you talking about how the best you can do is be the presence that is not anxious.
The presence, yeah.
Shade tree.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's all I can do. I can be there physically. I can ask if I can get you something, but I don't have any words. There aren't really any words.
Yeah, exactly. I'm finding in in dealing with my brother and taking care of details, that's where I'm able to actually show him the love, is getting him things that are making his life a little bit more comfortable, right? An electric blanket and compression socks and all kinds of things that are just really practical and that I get for him. And he does enjoy those things. He's very grateful for those things. And it's enough.
Yeah, I was just thinking about what you said earlier also, that if I remember right, that death has been a topic that has been with you since childhood. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a question in it. It's just like, well, for some people it seems just a thing that you're occupied with. Mm-hmm. And for other people it seems like the scariest thing. For instance, I have a nephew that has the same thought, and he's just been told by my parents and my sister all the time, you shouldn't think about stuff like that. Just enjoy. Have fun.
Yeah.
But at the same time, why not?
Right.
And that's what you signed up for.
If it's his nature to consider death and all the losses, then so be it, right? It's the subject of all great literature. Think about it. All great literature. Death, the theme of death is embedded either very prominently or, you know, somehow or other it's in. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I used to tell him that, well, he's just in the club with the other big philosophers.
Exactly. Right. And the great literary giants. Yes, he's in that club. Oh, beautiful, my dear.
I had some time to reflect, Catherine, and about what you shared at the beginning, and first of all, indeed, heartfelt care and compassion to your situation. And it sort of, I've realized out of it that I've often thought about this idea of how to die consciously. What does that involve, right?
Mm-hmm.
But listening to your description of your experience and ongoing sort of relationship with your brother at this stage, I realized that in a sense, it's not so much about how to die consciously, but how to be conscious with death.
Yes.
Because that's kind of like the arc, like die consciously, okay, that's the sort of the end result of it.
Right.
But to be conscious with death, and I'm reminded of those, I think there is a set of meditation, I'm not sure, certainly Buddhist, but I'm not sure which origin, maybe Tibetan, with, you know, like this body is a bag of mucus, this body, yes. The old sort of yes. set of kind of reflection.
That was in our Theravada one as well. That was very much.
Oh, is it? Okay, right. Yeah.
Body parts, they're like the 32 parts or something like that, bones,
right.
You and blood and mucus.
Yeah, all the wonderful stuff, right? So. So yeah, I was sort of was just amazed to see how just by switching those two words, the whole process become clearer in a way for me.
Yes,
because this how to die consciously sounds like a sort of a noble cause, but it's very hard to connect with it.
Yeah,
In a sense, well, does okay? I can sort of contemplate what does it look like, but it's not an experience. But how to be conscious with death, with the aging, with disease, with, you know, the fact that the body is fallible and continuously, as I get old, reminds me that
yes.
that it is so. And just be conscious from a place of acceptance and care, self-care and surrender and all that.
Yes.
So thank you.
Yes, that's very good. Thank you. Yeah. Conscious along the way. Hi. Hi. So you saw me in Hampstead at the Friends Meeting House. Was it there?
Yes. I think it was about 20 years ago. My friend Rory, who you know.
Oh, yes, Rory.
He thinks it was about 20 years ago. But anyway, I just remember very vividly, I came into the meeting house. I never met you before. And I just remember you had such a warm, welcoming, lovely smile. And I just felt so kind of at ease, and I felt a kind of kindredness with you somehow. And I haven't been to many of your meetings, but I've always had this feeling that although you're one of them, one of the enlightened ones, so to speak.
No, no.
All right. No, no.
Not a group I want to be in either.
Well, I somehow see all the teachers being on the other bank, the other side. But you somehow have a certain vulnerability that just makes me feel very at ease somehow. Just such a kindness. And I really feel for you.
Thank you. Heartbreaking, you know.
Heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Is he your only sibling?
He's the only one left. He's the only one left of my original family, other than me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah. Much love and thank you.
To your point about the enlightened ones, it's been my experience in life, having met a lot of teachers over the years, that the most regular and humble and kind of everyday ordinary teachers are the best teachers. They're not these whole powers.
Well, that's certainly applies to you.
There's not a pretense, but that they have the ability to precisely share in language their internal experience, right? And their experiments with truth, as Gandhi said. And sometimes we give extra points to people who can speak these matters. But so very many people express in other ways, like through music or art or any number of ways in their craft. You know, sometimes you see something that someone's created. Maybe they've carved a whale, you know, out of wood. And you realize there's so much love in that expression that they left for us, that they spent all that time doing that so beautifully and so precisely. And sometimes you see, you know, like the way that a sculptor might show a certain image, just the grace in it, you know, just the beautiful grace that they must be seeing because they were able to carve it out of stone. So I sometimes feel shy or something like shyness about people projecting on me that I live in some special wisdom realm with my fellow enlightened ones. It really isn't like that. There are some people who are just really good at articulating their internal voice, right? The one you just usually have to yourself. And maybe it doesn't come in words when you're just in it with yourself. You understand? Sometimes it's silent. You're experiencing something in silence so profoundly. And what I consider a good teacher are people who are able to articulate that in words such that other people can understand it, and it triggers, it pings that place in them that knows that's true. That they say, okay, I recognize that as the truth. And people are so grateful for that. They're so grateful for it. But really, it's just another kind of art form that some people have for, you know, and it's not to discount the wisdom that's being shared either, but sometimes one gets an overpayment of sorts for being able to articulate. And I dare say that there are many, many people on this call today, even some who do share and articulate with words, but many, probably everyone on this call has an incredible Dharma wisdom that is expressed in other ways, perhaps, than in language. And I really encourage people to understand that that is going on when you meet anyone. Like, I find it very interesting to have a conversation with someone that, like, for instance, I'm staying with my stepmother, and near my stepmother's place is a fish shop where they have delicious homemade fish soups of different kinds, a different fish that's all super fresh. And the guy who owns it, he's kind of struggling because he needs help and he's doing everything by himself. But he and I mean, I've just gone in there just to get stuff for my stepmother's house. And I just find it interesting because he is very precise with what he does. He's really precise. And I love that about him. Everything feels impeccable. His shop does not, it's the fish is so fresh. It doesn't smell like a fish shop when you walk in. It's so clean and so fresh. And my apologies to you vegans on the call, if there are any. But anyway, so I like to find a person's love expression, their love language, as people will say, you know, their love offering. I like to really know what that is and celebrate it. And I just feel like everybody given half a chance. I see this in retreats. I've been leading retreats for more than 30 years, silent retreats. And I see it in retreat over and over and over again. Every single person, usually every single person, there are some exceptions, but it just becomes a font of wise expression when they've had some time in silence and that channel gets opened up. And sometimes it's not that you're experiencing it in their words. Some people never even speak in the sessions, but you sense it in their being or in the way that they're getting their food on the plate or graciously stepping aside to let someone be in front of them or any number of things. You see just 100 different ways that people are showing the beauty of their soul. So I really encourage all of us to know that about yourself and to offer that in all the ways you can and see it in others, see it in the people you meet in different so-called ordinary circumstances. This has been In the Deep. Please visit our website at katherineingram.com to join our mailing list if you'd like to participate in a live Zoom session or be informed of other events. At our website, you may also make a donation, which is tax deductible for U.S. residents, and we welcome reviews on the podcast platform of your choice or even just sharing this podcast with your friends. Till next time.